You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
So a little kind of backing up to what happened in 1972, can you tell me just kind of an overview of the case?
Sure. So in 1972, off Old Colchester Road, which is in the Lorton area of Fairfax County, around 1:30 in the afternoon, a 14-year-old boy was coming home from school and passing that location. There's a small bridge that goes over a creek, and the boy looked down into the creek area and saw the body of a child laying in the creek bed. So he went home and told his mom. His mom came to the scene and they were able to get the police there. And that's when the investigation started.
And so they pulled this boy and he had blunt force trauma. Well, it was ruled a homicide, but he had blunt force trauma throughout his body.
Blunt force trauma to the head is what caused the death. During the autopsy, the medical examiner was able to see that there were other injuries in various stages of healing that appear to be indicative of child abuse.
I see that you guys wrote that there was a local church group that gave him a name, kind of adopting him as their own when he was unknown. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I don't know too much about that group other than what I've read in the news stories from back in the day, because as far as I know, they're no longer in existence, but it was a group called the Charlottes. I don't think that they were affiliated with a particular church, but it was a woman's group, I believe. And when, you know, after days and weeks went by the investigation and no one came forward to claim him, they took the responsibility for his burial. And he was buried in Coleman Cemetery in Alexandria. And they gave him the name Charles Lee Charlotte. So Charlotte coming from the name of their group, which is the Charlottes. And so that was the name that was on his tombstone at the cemetery.
It's crazy how similar this is to the boy in the box. So obviously, fast forward, there's been a couple things that popped up in the 2000s, and obviously DNA kind of exploded in the 2000s. So a little history before you guys were able to actually identify him.
Yeah, so for about 30 years, not much happened with this case, just because, like you said, DNA hadn't become a thing yet. And so there's only so many messages that can be sent out. You know, this we sent a teletype out to all states east of the Mississippi, and asking for any jurisdictions if they had any missing persons reports or abduction reports. And, you know, after so many years of sending those out and not getting any responses, or getting some responses, but then it turned out to, you know, be a different, related to a different child, the case just went cold pretty quickly and stayed cold for a long time until around 2003. Which is when they started to revisit some of the evidence and submitted some hairs to the FBI to try to develop a DNA profile.
And obviously we know the, you know, the story of the Golden State Killer and how that has kind of kicked off this genealogy, identifying anybody's or whatever through genealogy. When did you guys pick up the case to say, okay, we need to try it with this case?
So 2021 is when I got involved. So the FBI did develop a profile in 2003. They entered it into the National Missing Persons Database, didn't get any hits. So it went cold for quite some time. That's when NCMEC got involved and they were able to do a computer generated sketch, so to speak, or picture of his face to make him look more lifelike, to hopefully get someone's memory from back then to see if they recognize them, but nothing came from that. And so we started going the genealogy route in 2021, and that's when we began this process.
And tell me a little bit about that process and what it entailed.
Sure. So the first thing is with the hairs, when the FBI initially analyzed the hair, it wasn't a strong sample. And so the detectives in around 2016, before I got to Cold Case, they had tried to locate the boy's body in the cemetery to exhume him to try to get better, stronger DNA from his body. But unfortunately, when they went to the cemetery, they learned that a storm had come through a couple of years before and had washed away his headstone. So they couldn't actually locate his burial plot. And the record keeping from the cemetery just wasn't great from back in 72. So they couldn't even figure out where he was buried. So they got stuck again in 2016. 2021, we wanted to do genealogy, but we knew we couldn't get DNA from his body. So I went back into the evidence and located the hairs that were collected from his autopsy in 1972. When I opened the package, it wasn't what I expected. I expected to see longer strands of hair, but what I found was instead little specks of hair, because if you could tell from his picture, he didn't have a lot of hair. So when they shaved his head at autopsy, it was a very, very minimal amount that they were able to take. So I was concerned and I talked to the lab. The lab is called Estrella. They're in California. And they told me that they needed at least 2 centimeters of hair. That's what they typically work with for a sample. And I told them, I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to get that to you. And I got on a Zoom call with them and I showed them what I had. And they said, well, gather up as much of the specks of hair that you can and send it, and we'll see what we can do with it. And sure enough, they were able to get a profile, a DNA profile from those small specks of hair that I sent them.
Who does the genealogy then, I guess? Do you do it like when you get the full profile back?
No, so NCMEC was working with a company called Innovative Forensics Investigations, and they did the genealogy work for us.
And how long did that take, and where did that lead you to?
So once we got the profile uploaded, I would say it was only a couple of weeks before we got the first hit to a family member, and it was a close family member. So we were in business pretty quickly, which was exciting. And so then we quickly spoke to that family member and was able to get information, and then the story fell into place not long after that, and which led us up to Philadelphia.
And can you kind of describe what the story is as you know it right now?
The story that we know, once we talked to who we believed at the time to be Little John Doe's aunt, she told us that she did have a nephew who left Philadelphia with his mom, Vera Bryant, around that time frame. She says she remembers the boy, his name was Carl. She remembers that it was right before he was going to be going into preschool, and that matched the age range of the body that we had in our jurisdiction. But she said that Vera had Carl, who was 4 at the time, and then she also had a 6-month-old baby named James. And Vera was dating a man named James Hedgepath. He was not the father of either of the two, but that was her boyfriend at the time. And Vera told her sister that the 4 of them, so Vera, her boyfriend James, her son Carl, and her other son, baby James, we're going to be headed down to the Virginia area, which is where the boyfriend's family lived. And so that was the last thing that the sister knew about the whereabouts of the boys. And so last thing she knew, they all headed down to Virginia and the boys were never seen again.
And what was Vera's story if the aunt gave any of that about like where her children were?
So Vera did return to Philadelphia that Thanksgiving. Our John Doe was found in June of 72. So that Thanksgiving, November of that same year, Vera and her boyfriend did go back to Philadelphia and were with her family. And they asked, where are the boys at? And she said, oh, they stayed down in Virginia with his family. And they definitely all thought that was weird that she wouldn't bring her kids up for a big holiday like Thanksgiving. And there was actually a big family argument that night about that and the fact that they didn't like her boyfriend. So there was a big falling out that night between Vera and the rest of her family. And that was the last time that her sister ever saw her. She said, as far as she knew, Vera had gone back down and just lived in Virginia. She had no idea what the address was of where they were staying, didn't know a phone number, you know, no cell phones back then in the day. So she just completely lost contact with her sister and didn't even have a way to ask about the boys after that Thanksgiving falling out.
Vera died and the boyfriend, did he die around the same time? Did they die together? What were the circumstances there? Just like of sickness or?
No, so Vera died in 1980 in Philadelphia. So her sister said that she didn't even know Vera was back in Philadelphia. Like I said, the last thing she thought was that they were staying down in Virginia. So she was very surprised when the Philadelphia Police Department knocked on her door in, I think it was February of 1980, and said, your sister has died. And she didn't even know that she was still in the area. So Vera's death was ruled an accidental drowning. I don't know too much about the specifics of that case. Detective Hesser, I think, has that case file, but I don't know the specifics of it. I do know that that night, her and James Hedgepath were in a car. He got pulled over and arrested for a DWI and was brought to the jail. Vera, and this is according to a news article I found about her death, Vera was walking back to her house to get her paycheck to be able to pay his bond, and she never made it back to the jail. Something happened and she drowned. It was an accidental drowning. So we know that James Hedgepath wasn't involved in her death because he was in the jail at the time, but it's still interesting. I wish I knew more about the circumstances of her death, but Detective Hester might be the best one to ask.
And then as far as James Hedgepath, how did he die?
He died in 2017 in Washington, D.C. I see a very brief report in our database about it. It appears natural causes. He was definitely older at that time. I think he would have been in his 80s. So I don't see anything suspicious with his death, but he died in 2017 in Washington, D.C.
And so kind of the, I guess, is your investigation continuing, or do you think you believe that maybe it was James and Vera who are responsible for Carl's death?
We do believe that, but we did our press conference on Monday. So we are asking if the public has any more information just to make sure there's not someone out there that has information or remembers seeing them, you know, at a rest stop somewhere along 95 during that time that can provide us a little bit more insight, maybe as to the dynamics of their relationship, or if they saw something happen along that route from Philadelphia down to Virginia. So we're going to do our due diligence and make sure that we give this case enough time to see if the public has any additional information to help us out. But at this point, we do believe that one, if not both adults are responsible.
And then when it comes to the 6-month-old, I guess you're still looking for either a body or do you believe that there's any possibility this baby could be alive?
You know, there's always a possibility. I just don't know. And that's another reason why we wanted to get this information out to the public to see where he's presumed to be dead, just because, you know, Vera never reported him missing. There was never any information that she had given him maybe to another family member. So because she never came forward with that, we are presuming that he's dead. But again, we want to make sure, get the information out there and give it some time to see if anything else comes from, you know, the news reports, the press conference, radio shows like this. So we're going to kind of wait and see what comes before we decide how we're going to move forward with the missing persons case.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Is there anything else that I didn't ask that you wanted to mention?
No, I think that covers it. I always want to say to to anyone who, any reporter. Like, I can't thank the Philadelphia Police Department enough. I've said it a million times. I would not have been able to get this case to where it is now without their help. Detective Hesser and his partner, Mike Vinson, were just phenomenal. And, I know they're busy up there. Philadelphia is very busy with they're in homicide. They've got a lot of cases. But anytime I called and needed something, their help was just immediate, no questions asked. And they were really the ones that were able to get me the help that I needed. And they helped with exhuming Vera's body. I had never done that before. They have a lot of experience with doing that. And so they really walked me through that process. And I just can't thank them and their department enough for the help.
I'm glad you mentioned that part just really quick. So, is that how you got the exact match was through Vera's body also?
Yes, so we were able to get a court order from a Philadelphia judge to exhume her. And so that was done, I think it was last summer, last July of 2024. And so we were able to take portions of her remains and send them directly to Estrella. And they were able to come up with the match to confirm that Vera is the mother of this child. And then based off of the birth certificates that we were able to get from Vital Records, confirming that Carl was 4 years old, that matches the body that we have in our jurisdiction. So our medical examiner was able to take all of that and was in agreement that we have indeed identified our John Doe as Carl Matthew Bryant.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I'm going to stop recording.
Okay.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
StreetEasy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.